back the layers sounds like such a good idea. Almost like you're on a joyride to finding the most delicious treat and answers. But there's a thin line between self-discovery and self-sabotage. When you question every good thing that happens to you and attribute it back to pure luck or coincidence. You know what I mean? Well, the anxious little girl in me always finds a way to convince herself that she is just not good enough. That good things shouldn't come easy. Everything has to be earned. No accomplishments? No acknowledgement. But our years teach us. We learn to reparent ourselves. We learn to take care of that little boy or girl. If this resonates with you, welcome to the Lavender Fix Podcast. There are many ways we overthink. But the most common way that overthinking manifests for me, for example, is in the form of assuming the worst possible outcome. Even if my rational brain is telling me over and over that the facts and evidence suggest otherwise, that the odds are in my favor. It's called catastrophizing. And catastrophizing is a cognitive distortion. Cognitive distortions are internal mental filters or biases that increase our misery, fuel our anxiety, and make us feel bad about ourselves. You know, our brains are continually processing a lot of information. To deal with this, our brains oftentimes seek shortcuts to cut down our mental burden. Catastrophizing is when you fixate on the worst possible outcome and treat it as likely, even when it is not. I recently had a layoff scare at work, and for those of you who don't know this, last year I got laid off in the middle of my divorce agreement finalizations. Can you imagine? It was a very scary time, so I carry a lot of post-traumatic stress from it. I never depended on my ex-husband for money, and I paid equitably towards rent, gas, groceries, etc. But to know that there's someone with you, that there's always going to be roof over your head if something bad were to happen, or if you were to lose your job, is just a whole other kind of security we all feel to, we all deserve to feel. So recently, I found myself in a near layoff situation again. Thankfully, I was able to switch teams and stay with the company. And even though all of my conversations with my manager and the manager-to-be pointed in the direction of, Sabrine, you're okay. I think we have place for you. My mind assumed that there would be more surprises next week. And not in the exciting way, not like good surprises, like awful thoughts of what else could happen. Is somebody plotting against me? What is the worst possible outcome that could come out of this? And what would I do if those things were to actually come to life? I lost 5 pounds or 2.5 kilos over one weekend, had muscle spasms, shivers, I lost appetite, I walked like 40,000 steps, I passed out twice in the office, and what not. I'm not sure exactly how many cognitive distortion types there are, but I did some research and I have a list of 15. You may deal with more than one. And, you know, we can then sort of get into the reframing tactics to help you break out of the vicious cycle. Because I know that I need to break out of this vicious cycle. It's not a healthy way to exist. But a lot of self-work is involved in order to come out on the other side. So let's get into it. Number one. Filtering. Mental filtering is draining and straining all positives in a situation and instead dwelling on its negatives. So even if there are more positive aspects than negative in a situation or person, you focus on negatives exclusively. I grapple with this one a lot. So Let's look at an example. It's performance review time at your company, and your manager compliments your hard work several times. But in the end, they make one improvement suggestion. What do? You leave that meeting feeling miserable and you dwell on that one suggestion all day long instead of also paying heed to all the positives they listed. So this is a very common one. Next, polarization or all or nothing thinking. Polarized thinking is thinking about yourself and the world in an all or nothing way. So when you engage in thoughts of, say, black and white with no shades of gray, this type of cognitive distortion is leading you, right? So an example of this would be your coworker and you got on really well until she ate your sandwich or stole your favorite pen unknowingly. Now you can't stand her at all. Or you got a B grade on your last test, and so you have failed at being a good student despite getting only A's before that. All or nothing thinking usually leads to extremely unrealistic standards for yourself and others that could affect your relationship and motivation. So, you know, black or white thoughts may also set you up for failure, quite frankly. Another example would be, you know, you've decided to eat healthy foods. And again, this happens to me all the time. So you've decided to eat healthy foods, but today you didn't have the time to prepare a meal. So you eat a really nice, juicy burger. And this immediately leads you to conclude that you've ruined your entire healthy eating routine. And so what's the point of continuing? Because I think I've gained all my weight back. Because, you know, when you eat an unhealthy meal, you feel slightly more bloated. But your progress hasn't been lost. You've been putting in work for weeks and weeks and weeks. And yes, you feel a little off after eating a heavy meal. But that doesn't bring you back to square one. And so people who deal with this sort of a cognitive distortion in a situation like this would just decide that they no longer even have to try eating healthy, right? So when you engage in polarized thinking, everything is in either or categories. This might make you miss the complexity of most people and situations. So you have to be careful. Overgeneralization. This is another one. When you overgeneralize something, you take a very isolated negative event and you turn it into a never-ending pattern of loss and defeat. So with overgeneralization, words like always, never, everything, and nothing are frequent in your train of thought, right? So very sweeping statements. An example would be you speak up at a team meeting and your suggestions are not included in the project. You leave this meeting feeling, I ruined my chances for a promotion. I never say the right thing. It's always me. And overgeneralization can also manifest in your thoughts about the world and its events. So another example would be you are running late for work. And on your way there, you hit a red light. That agitates me a lot. This happens to me on days when I'm really running super late and I hit like multiple red lights. And you start thinking, nothing ever goes my way. So that would be an example of overgeneralization. Another one, discounting the positive. Discounting positives is similar to the first one, which is mental filtering. And the main difference is that you dismiss it as something of no value when you do think of positive aspects. So, example, if someone compliments the way you look, you think that they're just being nice. If your boss tells you how comprehensive your report was, you discount it as something like, nothing special here. Anyone else could do it on the team. If you do well in the job interview, you think it's because they didn't realize you're not that good. Again, when I lost my job last year, this was my thought process through most of the interviews. And when I did end up getting the offer, I was like, I guess they didn't really see through me and my bullshit, right? Another one, jumping to conclusions. When you jump to conclusions, you interpret an event or situation negatively without evidence supporting such a conclusion. And then you react to your assumption. Example, your partner comes home looking very serious. Instead of asking them how they are, you immediately assume that they're mad at you. Consequently, you keep your distance, and in reality, your partner actually had a really bad day at work. And this can then further get complicated because then they feel bad that you didn't ask them what was wrong and you assumed it had to do something with you, and all that stuff. You know the beat. And jumping to conclusions or mind reading is often in response to a persistent thought or concern of yours. So you attach actions of other people with what you think they're thinking. So there's a lot of projection there. Another example would be you feel insecure about your relationship. So when you see your partner looking serious, you assume that they might be losing interest in you. Okay. Whew. My favorite one, well, not my favorite one, but the one I deal with all the time, and the example that I gave you is directly connected to this cognitive distortion. It's called catastrophizing. Catastrophizing is related to jumping to conclusions. So in this case, you know, you jump to the worst possible conclusion in every scenario, no matter how improbable it is. And this cognitive distortion often comes with what if questions. What if he didn't call because he got into an accident? What if she hasn't arrived because she really didn't want to spend the time with me? What if I help this person and they end up betraying or abandoning me? And several questions might follow in response to one event, right? Example, what if my alarm doesn't go off? What if then I'm late for the most important meeting? What if I get fired after I've worked so hard for this job? Sabrine. It has Sabrine written all over it. Exactly what I experienced last weekend when I had that layoff scare for the second time.
Let's take a quick break.
This is Christine Estrada with Living Purpose Podcast. Do you know what your purpose is? What makes you tick? What motivates you to discover new things? Where do you find the motivation and strength to lean in to searching for that purpose? All of these are questions that I have had for many years. And if you're like me and these questions have been ruminating for you, or you just love good stories about everyday people doing everyday greatness, then you have found the space. I invite you to come sit with Living Purpose Podcast and lean into the beauty of storytelling. This is where stories matter. Consider joining us every month as we dive into discovering new pathways to purpose.
Next, personalization. This one leads you to believe that you are responsible for events that, in reality, are completely or partially out of your control. And this cognitive distortion often results in you feeling guilty or assuming blame without contemplating all factors involved. Example. I'm trying to think of one. Your child has an accident and you blame yourself for allowing them to go to that party. I don't have kids, but I know a lot of friends who do. And there is this real kind of guilt when something bad happens to your kid, God forbid. You feel that if your partner had woken up earlier, that you would have been ready on time for work, right? With personalization, you also take things very personally. I think that's implied. Your friend is talking about their personal beliefs regarding parenting, and you take their words as an attack against your parenting style. I see this happen all the time. Again, there is an element of projection here. Your own insecurities surface during these thought processes. Next, control fallacies. The word fallacy refers to an illusion, misconception, or error. And control fallacies can go two opposite ways. You either feel responsible or in control of everything in your and other people's lives, or you feel you have no control at all over anything in your life. Example would be you couldn't complete a report that was due today, and you immediately think, of course I couldn't complete it. My boss is overworking me and everyone was so loud today at the office. Who can get anything done like that? And in this example, in particular, you place all your control of your behavior on someone else or an external circumstance. And this is an external control fallacy. The other type of control fallacy is based on the belief that your actions and presence impact or control the life of others. So if we were to take an example of the other bit, you know, you think you make someone else happy or unhappy. You think all of their emotions are controlled directly or indirectly by your behaviors. Right? Hope that makes sense. Next, fallacy of fairness. This cognitive distortion refers to measuring every behavior and situation on a scale of fairness. So finding that other people don't assign the same value of fairness to the event makes you very resentful. In other words, you believe you know what's fair and what isn't, and it upsets you when other people disagree with you. The fallacy of fairness will lead you to face conflict with certain people and situations because you feel the need for everything to be fair according to your own parameters. But fairness is rarely absolute and can be often very self-serving. An example would be you expect your partner to come home and massage your feet. It's only fair since you spent all afternoon making them dinner. But they arrive exhausted and they just want to take a shower. They believe it's fair to take a moment to relax from the day's chaos so they can pay full attention to you and enjoy your dinner instead of being distracted and tired. But you will look at it as a very selfish act on their part for not doing what you think they should be doing immediately as soon as they come back home. Next, blaming. Blaming refers to making other people responsible for how you feel. You made me feel bad, is what usually defines this cognitive distortion. However, even when others engage in hurtful behaviors, you're still in control of how you feel in most situations, right? The distortion comes from believing that others have the power to affect you and your life even more than yourself. Example would be your partner comments on your new dress and you feel upset for the rest of the day. And you think, you make me feel bad about myself. And you say it to them and it creates conflict. Next, shoulds. You know, as cognitive distortions, should statements are subjective, ironclad rules you set for yourself and others without considering the specifics of a circumstance. You tell yourself that things should be a certain way with no exceptions. So an example would be you think people should always be on time or that someone who's independent should always be self-sufficient and never ask for help. And when it comes to yourself, you might believe you should always make your bed or you should always make people laugh. And you keep telling yourself that you should be better. When these things don't happen, they really depend on many factors. You start feeling guilty, disappointed, let down, or frustrated. You may believe that you're trying to motivate yourself with these statements, such as, I should go to the gym every single day. However, when circumstances change and you can't do what you should, you become very angry and upset. You go out of work, you got out of work late and couldn't get into the gym, for example, and that really upsets you, right? Another one would be emotional reasoning. Emotional reasoning leads you to believe that the way you feel in a reflection of reality. So I feel this way about this situation and hence it must be a fact. That's what defines this cognitive distortion. So example-wise, feeling inadequate in a situation turns into I don't belong anywhere. And this cognitive distortion might also lead you to believe that future events depend on how you feel. So you may firmly believe something bad will happen today because you woke up feeling anxious. This is, again, another one that I deal with. And I think for people who come from South Asian cultures where we're usually very superstitious, I am not, but like my mom is, this affects us pretty severely. You know, you might also assess a random situation being on your based on your emotional reaction. So if someone says something like something that makes you really angry, you immediately conclude that the person is treating you poorly. Another one, fallacy of change. The fallacy of change has you expecting other people will change their ways to suit your expectations or needs, particularly when you pressure them enough. Example-wise, you know, you want your partner to focus only on you, despite knowing that they've been very social. You know, they've always been very social and that they value time with their friends. So every time they go out, you let them know it's not okay with you. So eventually, you know, hopefully because of this feedback that you're giving them, that they will change their ways and would want to stay home with you more and spend more time with you. Something like that often leads to people feeling very suffocated in relationships. Again, a very common one. Another one, global labeling. Labeling or mislabeling refers to taking a single attribute and turning it into an absolute. So this happens when you judge and then define yourself or others based on an isolated event. And the labels assigned are usually negative and extreme. So, example, you see your new teammate applying makeup before a meeting, and you call them shallow, or they don't submit a report on time and you label them as useless. So this is an extreme form of overgeneralization that leads you to judge an action without taking the context into account. And this in turn leads you to see yourself and others in a way that might not be accurate. Assigning labels to others can really impact how you interact with them, and this in turn could add friction to your relationships. You know, you might come across as being overly critical or unreasonable. And when you assign those labels to yourself, it can hurt your self-esteem and confidence, leading you to feel insecure and anxious. Another one, and possibly the last one. I don't even know if I've covered 15, but this one's called always being right. This desire turns into a cognitive distortion when it trumps everything else, including evidence and other people's feelings. And in this sort of cognitive distortion, you see your own opinions as facts of life. This is why you will go to great lengths to prove that you're right. So, example, you quarrel with your sibling about how your parents haven't supported you enough. You're convinced this was the case all the time, while your sibling believes it varied according to the situation. And since your sibling doesn't feel the same way, you become angry and say things that rub your sibling the wrong way. And you know that they're getting upset, but you continue the argument to prove your point. So this one, I guess, pretty much applies to everyone, because who hasn't had an argument with their sibling, right? So now that we've been over this extensive list of cognitive distortions, what is the solution? I'm not a clinician, but I'm going to try my best and share with you what has worked for me. And it usually begins with small changes, right? So thinking about your thoughts, you know, if an event is upsetting you, step away from it if you can, and try to focus on what you're telling yourself about the event. Second, replace absolutes. So once you focus on your thoughts and recognize a pattern, consider replacing statements like always and nothing with sometimes and this. Three, defining yourself and others. You know, try labeling the behavior. Instead of labeling yourself as lazy because you didn't clean today, consider, I just didn't clean today. And one action doesn't have to define you. Fourth, searching for positive aspects. This is really important. Even if it's challenging at first, what if you find at least three positive examples in a situation? It might not feel natural, but eventually it becomes a very spontaneous habit. So you try to look at things from the lens of making the best of a bad situation or a moderately bad situation, right? Fifth would be, this is actually probably, I should have mentioned this upfront and something I hear in therapy all the time. Does evidence back up your negative thought? So before concluding, consider asking, investigating, and questioning yourself and others to ensure that you have as many facts as possible. If you can, make an extra effort to believe these facts. So these are like a few tips, things that have worked for me. But something else that you could try is, you know, changing roles in a situation. So how would you react to someone saying these negative things to a person you love? For example, if your neighbor came to your best friend and said, your partner doesn't love you, or you always embarrass yourself in front of your boss, what would your response be? So changing roles in your head may help you identify different aspects of the same situation that you could be overlooking. It can help you stop negative thoughts and replace them with more realistic and optimistic ones. So, you know, for instance, you may feel inclined to find arguments to the contrary, like they show you love, they called you twice today to check up on you, and also stopped to bring dinner home after working for more than 8 hours. I hope that makes sense. And going back to the fourth tip that I actually gave last, I'm going to come back to it, which is examine the evidence. Negative thought patterns aren't typically based on facts. I can't stress on this enough. I would get a t-shirt, merch, printed around this line. Negative thought patterns aren't typically based on facts. So similar to changing roles, examining the evidence is looking for cues in the situation that contradict your negative thoughts. If you notice some of your thoughts are about criticizing or belittling yourself, for example, turn to the evidence. List all the ways you're productive, successful, efficient, loving, or supportive. If you've been thinking about what you said this morning during a meeting that may have felt inaccurate, turn to all the times that you've said something interesting and how much you've contributed to your team. You may even focus on the reaction everyone had during the meeting. Did they really pay that much negative attention to your comment? You know, there's a book called The Subtle Art of Not Giving an F, and I'm not going to say the word because I don't want to label this episode as explicit. But we overestimate how much attention people actually pay to the so-called mistakes we make. If we stutter during a presentation, we think all eyes were on us, but really nobody remembers this stuff. There is more to you than those little blips that happen. You know, it may also be a good idea to separate facts from opinions. Thinking, I am so silly, is an opinion. I didn't submit the report on time is a fact. So just to sort of conclude, cognitive distortions are usually based on opinions that aren't related to the evidence. I know that there's a lot in the mix here, and hopefully some of these tips can help you get around the cognitive distortions, or at least help overcome the anxiety that stems from them. And I hope that this was helpful. I am still getting used to solo episodes. So, you know, there's a lot of research that goes into this stuff. I don't want to just publish an episode because I think I should. And lastly, thank you to everyone who submitted what they most overthink about. I think a lot of the submissions were centered around career, love life, weight, being unhappy in their marriages, and dealing with a lot of, it has to be me, I must have done something, you know? The stress of exam, what if I fail, even though you're so prepared? You know, having body dysmorphia, a lot of us deal with that. No matter how much weight you lose, you're constantly looking at yourself and belittling yourself and completely discounting all the progress you've made. So, you know, I think we will continue discussing this topic. I think there are many, many, many more layers to it. But in the meantime, if you haven't already, please, 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 depending on where you listen to this podcast, Spotify, Apple Podcast, wherever, please go and give this podcast full stars, please. Sincerely, if you enjoy it. It really helps me keep the momentum going. And as always, stick around because I have a lot more in store for you. Till then, keep your chin up.